Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Anderson, Stephen Brunt. I don't think our next guest drinks coffee, but you know what? He's naturally effervescent, so staying up into the wee hours of the night tonight will not be an issue if Game 3 of the ALCS calls for it. Calling the game on ESPN Radio, Dan Shulman. How's it going, Dan?
It's going great, Ben. Stephen, good to talk with you guys. I became a coffee person about 4 or 5 years ago, now I can't imagine how I got by without it. The older I get, the more I need it for these late nights.
That's but it's good. All good. I don't think they're going to play a crisp 2 hour and 25 minutes tonight, Dan. I don't know how to tell you this, but like this could drag on a little while.
Oh, they'll play 2:25, but that'll be the fifth. Then they'll play another hour 40. So that actually last night was like 3:20. Yeah. So by current standards, it wasn't bad. But listen, both offenses are great. And both pitching staffs are, the offenses are better than the pitching staffs on these two teams, although the Red Sox are pitching very well right now. So we knew coming into this series there would be no 2.5s or 3s or even 3.25s or anything like that. But it's always fun. I mean, I love this part of my job. You know, doing these games in October is great. And they can go as long as they want.
Yeah, make the game closer than yesterday, though, because it was hard to stay engaged when the Red Sox were putting up yet another grand slam. What does this offense remind you of, Dan? Like, I don't know if I've ever seen what the Red Sox have done here in these first three games offensively.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of other Red Sox teams because they can do this, and it kind of reminds you of that period this year when the Blue Jays were just destroying people, right? And there were times when people like me, and I'm sure you guys would say, boy, this lineup's really deep. Lourdes Gurriel's hitting seventh. Now look at Houston. Their lineup's very deep. Yuli Gurriel, who won the batting title, is hitting seventh. You know, now look at the Red Sox. I mean, Kike Hernandez is the best player on the planet right now. J.D. Martinez is not far behind. Rafael Devers isn't far behind him. Kyle Schwarber, what a pickup Kyle Schwarber's been for the Red Sox. And they got a guy in Hunter Renfro who hit 31 homers and drove in 96 runs. He's hitting seventh. So these are just, deep, talented, experienced, patient, dangerous American League lineups playing in hitters' parks on both sides. So, not that we expected 9-0 in the third couple of nights in a row or whatever it's been, but we did expect a lot of runs to be scored in this series.
Now, somebody's got to pitch, unfortunately, both those lineups. Look, Zach Greinke in 2021 is not the definition of a stopper. Isn't that... I'm watching Walker Buehler pitch for the Dodgers. He's exactly what you need in a situation like that, right? To be able to throw a guy like that out there who, you feel you can rely on and who can give you innings and can keep you in a game at the very least. Dusty Baker does not have that luxury.
He does not have those guys right now. And it's funny because their starting pitching was so deep for a while, Stephen, during the season. They ran a 6-man rotation for like weeks because they just didn't know who to take out. But Lance McCullers, who was the closest thing to their guy, he's on the IL, not on the roster. Greinke is compromised as well. He had COVID in early September and neck soreness in late September. He barely pitched in September. He came back the last day of the regular season and went 2 1/3, I think it was. And then he threw one inning in relief in one game of the division series. He's only starting a game because McCullers is on the IL. So if they get 50 pitches out of them, I'd be surprised, honestly. Like if they get 3 innings out of them, I'd be surprised. And then it'll be guys like Christian Javier and Luis Garcia. And remember, Garcia was the Game 2 starter, and he walked off the mound in the second inning with a sore knee. But he's back and apparently okay, and he might pitch tonight out of the bullpen. Javier is going to pitch out of the bullpen, and Dusty Baker hopes they're leading, and then he can turn it over to his high-leverage guys at the end and win a game. And then it's probably Framber Valdez in Game 5 tomorrow. But the Astros have gotten 5 1/3 innings total out of their 3 starters in this series. Obviously, it's just impossible to win. But if I'm Houston, I'm thinking do anything you can. You just got to try to win one. And then you're going back home. You get an off day before Game 6, and you're going back home, and you try to figure it out there.
You got to figure out if the Red Sox are picking up on something from these starting pitchers as well. There was some allusion that maybe the Astros pitchers are tipping their pitches. I'm not going to get into the stuff that goes beyond that because there is a lot of that historically involving these two teams. But you're there, Dan. Like, have you heard that same thing that maybe the Red Sox have picked up on that Alex Cora is so good during his playing days of picking up pitchers' tendencies that maybe they've actually figured something out?
A little bit, nothing concrete. You know, whisper here, a hearsay there, that sort of thing. But again, like you said, if you had to pick two teams in baseball who are going to try to get that edge, these might be those two. So in a sense, you almost not feel sorry for either one of them if the other team is doing it to them. But if you're getting it just by watching, if you're getting it because you're sitting on the bench and he's tipping, hey, he's doing this on a fastball and that on a curveball, like that's fair game, as you guys know. So both of these teams they've had a history in that area. And again, they've got some very smart, experienced veteran players. So they might be onto something. But if they're doing it above board, then it's up to the Astros to figure out what they're doing wrong and fix it, to be honest with you.
The Red Sox, they're pitching, especially heading into the series, but really for most of the season, it wasn't a huge, nothing you would to write home about in a lot of ways. Their rotation, but Dan, they've held their own enough in this series again with the kind of offense they're getting and being able to grind that Houston staff up. Like Nick Pivetta looks tonight like a pretty darn good option. Eduardo Rodriguez pitched well enough last night. Sale is not Sale anymore, but boy, they're. It's a funny formula, in terms of a team that could win the World Series, but they're getting enough, I guess, out of their starters, right?
Yeah, exactly right. And when you swing the bats like they are now, and this was the thing with the Blue Jays too. Like the Blue Jays didn't have to have great starting pitching if the offense was going well. You just had to have enough to keep you in the game and hopefully turn it over to a good bullpen. And they, as you said, Stephen, they are getting enough. So they're. Rodriguez was good last night. Nathan Eovaldi, he's legit. He's a good starting pitcher. Nick Pivetta has had two really good outings in relief. One of them was fantastic. The 13-inning game against Tampa Bay that Christian Vasquez walked off in the division series. Pivetta pitched innings 10, 11, 12, and 13. Shutout ball in a game where he was supposed to start the next day, but they ran out of arms, so they threw him out there for four innings. And he was fantastic in relief, and Vasquez walks it off, and Pivetta's a hero. So he is a pretty good bet right now. Sale, as you said, really hit and miss, But at this point in 2021, if you have three reasonably good starting pitchers, you're doing better than most of the other teams are, even the ones that are still kicking right now. And I think, in talking to Alex Cora yesterday, he told us this, their bullpen – They had some real rough spots in their bullpen, and I know that'll ring a bell with Blue Jays fans. It's reminiscent of what the Jays had earlier in the year, but they got it to the point where they just could rely on it. Is it the best bullpen in baseball? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. But they've got enough guys down there, Josh Taylor, Garrett Whitlock, Hansel Robles, Ryan Brazier. Those four guys they feel are good enough that they can get it over the finish line most time when they're handed a lead. And that's kind of been the formula for the Red Sox.
Yeah, and it definitely helps to have an 8-run lead in the 8th and 9th.
Yes.
it's getting a little bit – there's a little bit of animosity between these two teams, and it started with the Carlos Correa pointing at his watch, it's my time, when he hits the home run, and now the Red Sox have, of course, taken that themselves. And we saw Cora yesterday – admonish Eduardo Rodriguez for doing that. What did you make of that whole back and forth and what you're hearing post that little interaction on the field yesterday?
So talk to both Alex Cora and Dusty Baker about that today. So, Correa obviously shows his emotion. That's no secret. And he's, this is my time when he hit the home run in Houston. Eduardo Rodriguez responded. It's like hockey. They get the guy who retaliates, right? The guy who responds, he then becomes the big part of the story. As you said, Cora admonished, an excellent use of the word admonished.
Thank you.
Admonished Eduardo Rodriguez last night. And then when he came off the field, gave him a big hug and told him he loved him and said, listen, that's not where we want to be. And I'm sure part of it was just don't poke the bear, right? Like, don't give them any bulletin board material. Dusty, like half an hour ago, was asked about it. And he kind of sighed heavily and he said, he goes, listen, man, he goes, I'm past that stage in life. He goes, I can't change the rules. He said, I'll tell you, if you had done that when I played, it would be handled a lot differently. And Dusty talked about his son, Darren. Remember little Darren who J.T. Snow saved his life at the plate when he was 3 years old? So Darren's 22, and he plays at Cal. I think he's a college player, I believe, at Cal Berkeley. And he was telling a story about talking to his son, Darren, last night. And he said, I try to say to Darren, like, act like you've been there before. So that's Dusty. Dusty's played in a different time. It's just different now. Maybe the thing that makes it less of a story is Carlos Correa said, I love it. I love that Eduardo Rodriguez did it. at least publicly, it doesn't bother Carlos Correa at all. And I can't see how it could, again, because he, quote, started it by announcing it was his time when he hit the home runs back in Houston. So, you know, we're going to see more and more of this. Remember when, I don't remember the game, you probably would, Ben, when Bo Bichette hit a monster home run late in the season, last homestand, I think, or second last homestand. Remember, he's rounding second base. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that different from what Carlos Correa was doing, except he didn't point at his watch.
Right.
Instead of it being my time, it was more like a this is my house kind of thing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we all loved it. Yep. There's nothing wrong. Carlos Correa was not looking at the Red Sox when he announced it was his time. Rodriguez was responding. I don't think it's that big a deal. And you know, kind of the horse is out of the barn on this stuff, right? Like, there's a ton more emotion in the game. And I think for the most part, that's good. I don't think there should be taunting. But for the most part, I think this is a positive development. And I think the players should be able to show their emotion and their personalities on the field.
When it's your guy flipping the bat, it's fine, Dan. I believe.
That's right.
I believe we have evidence of that right here where we're sitting.
That's right, Steve.
I want to ask you a little bit, but we'll talk a little bit about the National League Series. But the Yankees had their kind of postseason. Brian Cashman had his postseason avail yesterday. Obviously, Aaron Boone's coming back. And I know you know Aaron, you worked with him. Are you surprised? You know, are you surprised he's coming back? And also, but you know, it was interesting the kind of the tenor of the message coming from Brian Cashman and the Yankees. You know, we always kind of think of the Yankees are like the Dodgers, and they're going to, you know, they haven't been that team for a long, in terms of spending, for a long time. You know, the Dodgers were staying to Ben. They're what, $260 million. And the Yankees, you know, haven't gone into the luxury tax. They got a bunch of questions. They've got some guys hurt. But there's, you know, it's not the message coming out about the offseason isn't that kind of we're going to go out and dominate with our money. It's a way more measured response. That's, I guess that's the 21st century. And I know they signed Gerrit Cole and I know they signed DJ LeMahieu, but it's not, they're not really in that stratosphere with the Dodgers anymore.
No. They used to be the stratosphere. Now the Dodgers have kind of become the Yankees in terms of how they spend their money. And the Yankees are in that next tier with the Mets and the Red Sox. Those with maybe the Cubs, when the Cubs are really good, they would be up there. But you're right. And maybe that's just the difference between George Steinbrenner and Hal Steinbrenner, that Hal is more measured than George. You know, if George would just say, well, just go sign the guy and figure it out. Now, this is before luxury tax and all that sort of thing. But the fact that they were under the luxury tax this year, and I'm not an expert on that stuff, but that kind of resets their penalty so that if they go over, they're only penalized at a certain percentage, not a higher percentage. You get penalized at successively higher percentages if you're over in consecutive years. I would be a little bit worried if I'm, you know, the fan or an announcer for it, another team in their division. Like, eventually they're going to figure this out and spend their money wisely. Now, they've got some huge commitments. Stanton and Cole are enormous commitments.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, Aaron Judge is a free agent at the end of next season.
Yes.
This coming, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing, right? But the one I didn't see Brian Cashman's, you know, his scrum or anything, but I did see a quote where he said, we got to fix shortstop.
Yeah.
And
there's a few out there.
And there's a few out there. Now this is interesting. I am told that the Yankee animosity towards the Astros is so strong still that could potentially make it difficult for them to embrace Carlos Correa. Fine, great, but that still leaves Corey Seager. Like, they're going to get a guy, right? I think there's an excellent chance Corey Seager's playing short for the Yankees next year. I shouldn't even say this out, so I won't say it. Well, maybe Marcus Semien is playing for the Yankees.
Yes, I've already said it. I've come to the realization that's a possibility.
It's possible. Maybe Trevor Story is playing there, although Story didn't have his best year. But the Yankees have a shortstop problem and a catcher problem, and I think they're going to fix them. The shortstop one is probably easier to fix. And listen, the division's a bear, and it's going to be a bear next year because the Red Sox might win the World Series this year.
Yeah.
The Yankees figure to be better. And the Rays, I mean, we saw some, you know, we saw them exposed a little bit in the playoffs in terms of how young they were with some of their key pitchers. But they're probably going to get better, those pitchers. And I said this to JD in the morning, and he just about disconnected me. But, like, Wander Franco's a problem. He's great. He's great. And he's 20. And the Rays aren't going away. So the division's going to be a monster. And I watched Mark Spiro's thing yesterday and Ross's and all that. And I think the Blue Jays are going to spend money, and I think they're going to spend it wisely, too. And But it's an arms race in the American League East. It really is. And it's been the toughest division more often than not ever since I can remember.
Yeah, well, we were talking about the, you know, about spending, you know, where you might spend that money, Dan. Because, you know, and from the Jays' point of view, because, you know, I, the fan point of view, and after a, you know, great, a very good season and a spectacular September and a very likable team, you immediately say, let's, you know, keep the band together, right? Let's do whatever it takes. You know, number one, I'm not sure that's possible, but number two, I'm not sure it's the wisest thing, you know, like we were just talking about how the Dodgers let guys go, everyone, even though they spent $262 million this year. There's a lot of ex-Dodgers floating around in these playoffs, right, for other teams. Yep. So you know, it's like change and evolution have to happen, you know, whatever your payroll is going to be.
Absolutely. And one of the most important things Mark Shapiro said yesterday was, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember exactly how he said it, but you can't go into an offseason thinking, I have to sign that guy. You go into the offseason saying, I have to make the team better. But first of all, you can't publicly say you have to re-sign, whether it's Marcus Semien or Robbie Ray or anybody. It doesn't matter. You can't publicly say that, even if you privately feel that. And I don't know if you can even privately feel that, because they may get into a situation with Robbie Ray where it's 5 years, 125. I'm just making up the numbers. Or can they take the $25 million a year and get a good middle-of-the-order pitcher and a third baseman for the same amount of money? Like, there is a limit to what they're going to spend. So say this year, I think it was about $150 million this year, I believe. And let's hope it goes up, what, 160, 170, 180. I don't know what it's going up to. I think it's going to go up. But Vladdy's arbitration, Teoscar's arbitration, Barrios' arbitration, you guys, I'm sure, have discussed all this. There are raises built into the current roster. I don't know if they're going to get either one of those of Semien or Ray back, but I do know they're not just going to put the money in their pockets if they don't get them back. They're going to go out and get somebody, and maybe that somebody's Eduardo Rodriguez, and maybe that somebody's Anthony DeSclafani, and maybe that somebody is trading for Jose Ramirez, or maybe it's getting Eduardo Escobar and something else, and a, you know, a lights out relief pitcher. Like, they need more in the bullpen too, so. It's a big, complicated puzzle with a lot of pieces, and I don't think you can go into it saying, absolutely have to re-sign this guy. And you know, with Semien, too, as I'm sure you guys have talked about, like, if he wants to play shortstop, then it's over. And if he wants to play on the West Coast, then it's over, right? Then there's nothing they could do. And they had an incredible year out of him, and, and each side benefited from it. But in my mind, they need two starting pitchers, two good relievers. Like, Simber and Richards were great and hopefully will continue to be good, but I think they need a couple of guys with velocity who are used to pitching, like in the eighth inning, a guy who could fill in if something happened with Romano, like almost like a co-closer type. I think they need a couple of legit, towards the back end of the bullpen arms, two starters and a third baseman. That would be my shopping list.
Yeah, it sounds about right. And somebody can play second, and if you don't, you know, or you sign somebody at second and somebody can play third, right? There's a different ways you can assemble those pieces.
Yes, you can do either the – so then you've got Biggio and Espinal, right? And we all know Espinal can play third. We all believe that Biggio is better suited for second or a utility role than third. He just never looked as comfortable at third as he did at second. So, are they platooning at second? Are they both bench guys who play a lot, you know, get 300-400 at-bats? Somebody gets hurt. Somebody needs an off day. Somebody DHs, whatever. There are lots of different ways you could do it. You know, do they move somebody in the outfield? Like, they might, if they're getting Jose Ramirez, they're giving up something that's pretty good. And that might open up a spot in the outfield. There are lots of different ways they can do it. And I think they're going to spend money and try to get people to take their money. And I think there also might be a big trade coming if they can't get what they want in the free agent market.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun off season if it ever happens, or if it happens, you know, sometime in the winter, or if it happens in the spring. Fingers crossed with the CBA stuff. But yeah. It's a really interesting time for Blue Jays fans heading into a year where it's not World Series or bust, but that's definitely going to be the expectation to be into the playoffs. Dan, enjoy the game tonight, and thanks for doing this.
You got it. Talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
See you, Dan. Dan Schulman, calling game four of the American League Championship Series for ESPN Radio. I have a couple of things off of that.
Yes.
One is that, it would hurt to see Marcus Semien in pinstripes.
Yeah.
But I almost think that Corey Seager is the better fit for them in that ballpark. Like, how many home runs is he going to hit with that short right field?
He's the perfect fit. He's, and he would be a fine Yankee. Yes. Yeah. No, he fits. Not that Marcus Semien wouldn't be, but no. And there's, look, there's a wealth of shortstops out there, right? Like, yeah. This is one of the greatest, maybe the greatest crop of free agent shortstops in history. So a lot of teams are going to get a really good shortstop in that market. But be interested. I'd like the stuff that, if it's true that they wouldn't touch Correa.
That's super interesting, right? Yeah. Because we've seen the opposite where, you know, David Ortiz and David Price, they made up. They were best buds for a little bit.
That's correct. Yep. So I don't know. Like, personality, cheating scandals, I don't know, whatever it is, but he's a hell of a ball player. I'm sure, you know, seems like a large personality. You do have to kind of figure out, I think you do have to kind of figure out how a guy will fit in your clubhouse. I think that matters a bit, you know, and it's not, if he's good enough, it's not definitive, but you do have to take it into account a little bit, right? If you know,
I felt like Alex Anthopoulos, that was one of his big lessons learned here in building this team before 2015, that there are personality types.
He said that he has said that, and he said it to me, and I've had that conversation with him. But I would also argue that when they finally won, they had some pretty difficult personality types in that clubhouse, right? They all kind of balanced, maybe they balanced each other, but it's not like, you know, Josh Donaldson or Marcus Stroman or Troy Tulowitzki were shrinking violets. Like, there weren't a lot of, Russell Martin. Like, they allowed those guys to happen in the clubhouse, and it kind of allowed them to smack up against each other, and it worked. So, yeah, I think maybe if you're good enough, it doesn't matter. You know, maybe there's a whole bunch of factors. But, yeah, he did say that, you know, Alex said that it wasn't just about, kind of the analytic breakdown of what a guy was. You had to know who he was. Mm-hmm. You know, that's that part of it. You had to kind of understand the person a little bit. They're not, ball players are not just a collection of numbers. And I think he's right about that.
Yeah. They do have numbers, though. And a lot of those numbers are handed to the manager, and the manager is either allowed to do something with those numbers or he just follows the script. I got to tell you, this Yankees thing with Aaron Boone is intriguing to me because, you said it, the Yankees aren't maybe what they used to be or on that same level as that. I'm not used to seeing this, where I know they've been in the playoffs, right? Every year under Aaron Boone. Have not even made a World Series. They haven't won one since 2009. And when you're the New York Yankees and you got 27 pennants flying at Yankee Stadium, that's not good enough. And he took lots of slings and arrows for a team that was expected to do much more than lose in the wild card game. I don't know. It's just, I'm not used to seeing this, like, touchy-feely kind of Yankee stuff where, you know what, he's a good guy and you don't see the stuff that is probably more important than the on-field managing stuff because, like I said, that stuff is probably predetermined.
A lot of it is.
But it's just, and I know George has been dead for a while and that probably plays into it. Hal's not George.
No, he would have been fired four times now, right, George? but and then rehired. But, well, because there's a bunch of stories about that, right? Because the Yankees are on for them what is a historic World Series drought and the last guy to go as far as Aaron Boone went without winning a World Series for the Yankees was Buck Showalter, who was fired after his fourth year, which is, just had his fourth, Boone just had his fourth year and was, extended. And then before that, I think it's Ralph Houk, the second coming of Ralph Houk, which is, who was fired by George Steinbrenner when George Steinbrenner bought the team. So he was the manager in the early 60s when they won in, 61 and 62 or 62 and 63, I always forget which. And then he was there in that dreadful period in the late 60s when CBS owned the Yankees and they were awful, which was great, by the way.
Yeah.
but so, and George immediately fired him. But other than that, and I think the guy who was the first manager of the team in its history, like Major Rupert hired him, presumably, he's the only other guy who has gone as long, will have gone as long as Aaron Boone has without winning a World Series for the Yankees. So you're right. Yeah, it's not, they are not your father's Yankees or your grandfather's Yankees or your great grandfather's Yankees. They're, the language around Aaron Boone was kind of about, we've all gotta kind of get to know each other better, kind of something along those lines. But it wasn't the win or bust stuff. They're a funny operation right now. And they have a big payroll, but not the biggest. They are gonna have to pay Aaron Judge. I guess they're gonna give up on Gary Sanchez finally. They're gonna give up on some of the guys, who they thought were gonna be good. They've also had a bunch of, very well-regarded prospects, really hyped guys because they're playing in New York, who just hit the wall, right? They've got guys who did not develop. There's a,
Davey Garcia was a guy. He was supposed to be an ace, and Luis Severino's had injury problems. They look pretty good coming out of the bullpen.
He looked okay, actually, at the end there. But they're not, they haven't had this kind of a consistent string of guys. Yeah, there, you know, who kind of became something, but not what everybody thought he was going to be, right? So now they, you know, they're not drafting high. They're always a good team. They're not drafting in the top five, but they seem to have some organizational issues. Now Brian Cashman's had a good long run because you know, he goes back to 98 or 99 when he came in, right around, you know, the beginning of that.
I think he's going to the Hall of Fame, honestly.
I kind of think he is too. But it's been a long time since he's won a World Series. Again, if you're general manager of the Yankees and you haven't won a World Series that long, not those guys didn't used to hang around. George would not have been so patient.
New York City itself may have gone soft because apparently the Mets are going to make an offer to Javi Baez after he did the thumbs down to his home fans in Queens. So I don't know. Something weird is going on in New York City. This is not the New York City that I grew up knowing as a sports city. Very bizarre. They're extending managers that don't get to World Series, and they're bringing back guys that antagonize the fans. I don't know.
What's up? The world, again, the world's been turned on its head.
All right. When we come back, it's opening night in the NBA. Raptors don't open their season until tomorrow night against the Washington Wizards at Scotiabank Arena, but a couple of great matchups tonight. Let's talk to Doug Smith, the Toronto Star and author of We the North, next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Annis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Annis, Stephen Brunt. Never a dull moment in the NBA. Yesterday, I was chuckling at the gif of Ben Simmons practicing with his teammates again, wearing some sweatpants, and his phone was in his pocket.
Yes.
Things escalated today as he was suspended from the team, from practice, and also from the first game of the season. As the NBA season opens up tonight with a doubleheader, let's talk to Doug Smith of the Toronto Star and author of We the North, who is kind enough to join us online. How's it going, Doug? Thanks for doing this.
I'm glad. Glad to be here, guys. How are you doing? Everything all right?
Yeah, we're doing well. We've got basketball in front of crowds. And you know what? Here in Toronto tomorrow, and we'll get to the Raptors in a second, but this Simmons thing it's wild. What do we make of where the Sixers are now and where they go from here with Simmons away and now back, but now away again?
Well, they should have traded him in June or July or August or September. It was never going to work. It was an untenable situation on both sides. And he didn't handle it well because he should have gone at the end of the season, should have said, yeah, you know, I should have been better. I wasn't that good, but I'll help my teammates out. As he walked out, Salavoce said, give me the hell out of here. I'm done. And that would have been the right way to do it. He didn't do that. The Sixers didn't do that. It's become a situation where they're going to get 15 cents on the dollar.
Yeah. I'm assuming, Smitty, you're right. The reason, you know, he obviously didn't position them to trade him, didn't give them the maximum ability to trade him and get real value. But they were going to get what, 40 cents on the dollar, I guess, if they traded them then, or 60 cents on the dollar, right? Like that's,
yep.
And that's what that's why the deal didn't happen.
Exactly. And I think they knew that and they asked the moon. I know for a fact that the first call they made to Toronto, they wanted Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, and two draft picks, which is ridiculous.
Might as well, no harm in asking, I guess.
Yes. Exactly right. Yeah. Set the bar high and go from there. But so I think the Sixers didn't handle it very well because they asked the moon, and they, you know, you can't have, you know, Doc Rivers, the coach, when they left the playoff loss, was asked if he could win with Ben Simmons as a point guard, and his answer was, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the day you got to trade him because his value is only going to go down from there. The team doesn't want him. His teammates don't particularly like him. He didn't handle it very well, showing up and sort of moping through 2 days of practice solely to get his money. is not a good sign. And now I think he's toxic. I don't know. Some NBA general manager is going to say, I can reclaim this guy. I can make him good. Because, Stephen, you know, through years of baseball and basketball, no one's untradeable.
Mm-hmm.
One guy needs to think I can turn this kid around. But I'm not sure that guy is out there.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned that the Raptors were involved in talks. They may have been one-sided. And not that he makes sense on this roster because, I think they have some guys that they hope turn into the defender that Ben Simmons is and maybe better offensive players than what Ben Simmons is. But do you think now the price keeps plummeting, the Raptors reengage, or do you not see a fit there at all?
Well, I think by sheer due diligence of NBA general manager, you got to make the call. But you got to offer him 6 cents on the dollar instead of 10 cents on the dollar and see what you can do. Because he is a very skilled player in some aspects of the game, but the most important aspect of the game is the ability to be a good teammate and a good guy around the club. And I don't think he's ever shown that. I've never been a Ben Simmons fan. He's been in the league now, 4 or 5 years? He is no better player today than he was when he came in. And I don't think he has a heart to be the guy on your team that makes you a winner.
What are they, so if as they try and deal this distressed asset, what are they going to do? They send him home, but what are the implications for the Sixers the longer this guy, the longer he's on their roster, the longer they're still paying him and the longer he stays at home?
I think the longer he's with the roster, it's the longer the better the chance the roster implodes. And I'm sure he has friends. I'm sure he has teammates on the roster who understand what he's going through. And it becomes a toxic situation. And you have to jettison yourself. You have to just say, look, we're moving on. And we're going to take our hit and we'll try to build out assets for him. But I think for the sake of the team, the longer this goes on, the worse it gets. And it could absolutely send the season south by the 1st of December.
Doesn't sound like he has a lot of friends right now, Smitty. I guess.
No, really doesn't.
No,
really doesn't.
If Joel Embiid is not going to stand up for you in any way on that team, you can't play for that team, can you?
No, you can't. And he couldn't in May and June when they got eliminated.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that gets me, is that everybody saw this was necessary months ago. And they spent the summer kind of dancing around each other, and he didn't go play for Australia, and he never talked to the team, and the team didn't reach out to him, and the team engaged other teams in the league with ridiculous demands. So there's no good guy in this. I think Ben's more of a bad guy, but there's no good guys in this. So this has been a mess from the end of last season.
Yeah. Daryl Morey has not exactly handled it well, but neither has Ben Simmons. So mentioned it's a doubleheader to get the NBA season started tonight, and drama surrounding one of the teams that's in the first game. Nets and Bucks, a rematch of that great Eastern Conference Finals series between these two last season. Is it possible, Doug, that the Nets, okay, I still think they're better with Kyrie Irving, but could they look still like the championship contender that we expected them to be without him?
Oh, 100%. They're really good. Like, Kevin Durant might be the best player in the game. James Harden is the best scorer in the game. Blake Griffin was revitalized. I think the signing of Patty Mills was a big deal for them. I think it's a good veteran guy. I think Steve Nash is the perfect guy to coach that team. Because I think his temperament is, well, just get through it. We'll just deal with it. He's not going to go all crazy on it. I think the Nets are by far the most skilled team in the East, and I think they got to be the chalk right now.
Well, and the Kyrie problem, unlike the Philly, the Sixers with the problem they're dealing with, the Kyrie problem was solved for them by outside forces, right? Like that's in some ways that's the best, in the circumstances, that's the best possible outcome to say, well, look. There are decisions have been made that are outside of this organization, and we're going to abide by them. And if you change your mind, let us know.
100%. It's a lot easier that way to have the other bogeyman be in the New York State and New York City government as the guy, as the people to hold up as a stoppage to what we want to do. And it gives Kyrie an out, and it gives the franchise an out. And I think eventually he'll get one shot, which is all he has to do,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be quietly happen, and he will play again, and they will be the best team in the East.
Oh, yeah, I'd bet on that, considering that he's already said that he's not necessarily anti-vax, which has opened the door for that possibility.
He's also the voice for the voiceless, except he won't speak.
Right.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a bit muddled, but there's a message there somewhere, but I'm not getting it at this stage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a little bit confusing. But yeah, interesting to watch from the outside looking in. So Raptors open up their season tomorrow. Scotty Barnes is going to play his first ever regular season game. Super intriguing. The defense looks ready-made. What are your expectations for him?
For Barnes, I think he'll be like, I think he's going to be a very above-average rookie. I think he might be the best. In 7 years, he might be the best player in this rookie class. But as a rookie, I think he's going to struggle a little bit because he plays so much on emotion. And game 45, emotion doesn't carry you. You got to be a good player. I think his shot needs some work. I think his free throws need some work. I think he needs to understand the NBA game a little bit better. He is supremely talented. He's a great defender. He's long. He's got great footwork. But I think he needs to learn how to play in the NBA. And I think that's a process. It'll come, but I think this team is going to be very intriguing. They're going to win some games they shouldn't win. They're going to look great some nights. And they're going to look like me, you, Steven, and two of our friends some nights. Mm. And I think that's going to be how many nights they have when they look good and how many nights they look horrid is going to be the determining factor.
We had Nick Nurse on yesterday, and he sounded like like he always does, like kid in a candy store, right? Like he's he's going to have some fun. I would think part of that, at this stage in the evolution of the team, Smitty, is the fact they're going to defend like crazy, right? Like that, if you're going to start with something, they're going to do like that, and that's kind of the that's building block one of that of the culture of that team. That's their identity, and he knows he's going to get that.
Yeah, like hard work's going to win you 35 games. Mm-hmm. If you work hard every night, you're going to win 35 games in an 82 game season because the other guys won't work hard. They'll be tired. They'll be old. They won't want to play that night. And they got enough guys, they will allow them to work hard every night if it has to be three different guys, three different nights in a row. You know what I mean? Like they got enough young pieces who are intriguing that they're going to work hard every minute they're on the court because they're not jaded, they're not old, and they know their lives and their jobs are on the line. Mm-hmm. So I think in that regard, that way only, they're going to win a lot of games that they probably shouldn't on talent alone. And I think Nick, I've been sort of fascinated by Nick because his first year he had an old group of guys who knew how to play. And then he got Marc Gasol, which is like manna from heaven for a coach. Mm-hmm. And he did it perfectly. He let them figure it out. But I think he showed enough that he could figure it out too. And he doesn't necessarily have to be the players. I think he's going to be an interesting guy to watch this year because there's a lot of pieces. And he's shown a willingness to shift those pieces around and do unorthodox things. And I think that's going to be really necessary with this group.
But that's his nature, right? Like that's, again, that it plays, is. That, yeah. that's his nature. And the expectations are modest, right?
So, absolutely.
And you're integrating young players and, we'll see it's going to be intriguing to see what Siakam looks like and how that plays out once he comes back. But, in a lot of ways, Nick's playing with house money here. Which, absolutely. And he deserves it. He earned it.
Sure. And that's the best fun for a coach is that no one expects us to do anything. So I can do whatever I want. And I think he's got a lot of intriguing bits to sort of mess around with. I think Achiuwa is an interesting guy. I think guys like Bonda's an intriguing guy. We haven't seen Chris Boucher the entire preseason. Mm-hmm. So, Nick, he gets to the lab and stuff. Keeps cooking in his mind, but he's going to come up with stuff that might look crazy, but I think in this group might work.
He's got some coaching to do, no doubt. Doug, we appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
All right, guys, take care. Good to talk to you again. See you soon.
See you, Doug. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, author of We the North. Yes, every season is different for every coach and every organization. Can you think of four more weird years than what Nick Nurse has had to deal with since starting his head coaching career in the NBA?
I hadn't thought about it. You're right, though.
He steps into the seat where the reigning coach of the year was.
Yes.
He was fired. A guy he was an assistant under. And he was expected to take the same group of guys and do something different with them than the guy who was coach of the year. And then
a guy falls out of the sky.
The best player in the NBA is in his lap, and all of a sudden, okay, there's a different set of expectations. And not only is this guy supposed to lead you to greater heights in the postseason, he's only going to play half the games.
Yes.
You got to deal with that. Again, first year as an NBA head coach, and he's done lots of stuff. Like, he's coached in the British League.
Yes.
And then they win the whole damn thing.
Yeah, they had a nice parade. They had a hell of a parade, as I recall. It was quite a parade. So, yes, that's an interesting place to enter.
Year two, that guy goes. He leaves.
After some drama.
There's helicopters involved, I remember. He leaves, and you're left for dead. Everybody thinks your team stinks, and that was a great thing that happened, but into the wilderness you go.
Wasn't it great, but there we, yeah. And then
you exceed every possible expectation.
Play out of your minds, right?
You go into a bubble playoffs.
Because the world's gone to hell. Yeah, because there's a pandemic, of course. Yes.
And you're on the verge of getting blown out by the Celtics. And then you hit a shot with like 0.2 on the whatever, and you push it to a game seven that you could have easily won, except your best player decides he's going to be your worst player for a span of whatever. So they bow out to the Celtics in that season. Then you play a season where all your home games are in Tampa.
Yes.
And half your team gets COVID. And you finish with the seventh worst record in the NBA, and you draft fourth overall, and now you're going into a season back at home for the first time in almost 2 years with the fourth overall selection, a guy that was a surprise draft pick without your best player for 2 months. That's a way to start a career, Steven.
Those are four very distinct seasons, aren't they? Every one of those, there's not kind of a line through here is what I would say, right?
That's insane.
It is insane, yeah. I guess the one that kind of gets lost a little bit is the second one, right? Where the post-Kawhi, abandon all hope, hang on a second, they're really good. They had a really good, you know, and if that...
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm not sure what would have happened in a normal playoff, in a normal situation, in a not a bubble, but yeah, you want to talk about what, you know, and I'm like, everybody's a big fan of Nick Nurse, but that's the one, right?
Holy cow, the job he did. But yeah, I mean, not just the playing in the bubble, but remember... Yeah, Pascal Siakam was horrible in that game seven, and he was generally horrible in the whole postseason. He was not capable of dribbling a basketball for months. Could not take a shot for months. Like, how different that season plays out under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. Already, Nick Nurse, I think, deserves and gets a lot of credit for what he did with that team following the championship and the departure of its best player. But, like, yeah, it's just, man, that you can't. When somebody writes the Nick Nurse book, and maybe he'll be the man to do it, Steven, like that is...
I think he wrote his own, didn't he? I think he's already got a book. Maybe it'll be another book.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know he had a book already.
But the, you know, well, also again, in that third season, and like the last year, there was the best player in the history of the franchise countdown to when he gets traded at the deadline. And then,
forgot about that.
Do all the fond farewells from a distance in Florida. And then they don't trade him. No, and by the way, maybe the president's going to leave too, right? You know, maybe he knew he was never going to leave. I don't know. But yes, there are many things. There are many elements in those 4 years. There are many elements. You know, he started with a bang. But holy cow. Those are four crazy, you know, and he's you heard him yesterday, right? He's I think he's feeling pretty good.
Yeah. He's the guy from Iowa. it's crazy. Excited to see the NBA return tonight and excited to see the Raptors return tomorrow night as well. So we're watching the NLCS.
It's taking an interesting turn.
Holy cow. I think one of the things that kind of got lost in that World Series victory a season ago from the Dodgers was what incredible defense they played.
Mm-hmm.
They were an incredible defensive team.
I think folks know where this is headed now.
The Tampa Bay Rays were an incredible defensive team, and I love watching defense, and I love reminding people that defense matters in baseball. So I loved pounding the table during that World Series and saying, all right, you can't make it your number one focus, but the Blue Jays were a bad defensive team, and part of them getting to where they want to go is playing good defense.
Yep.
They're just showing Gavin Lux in the dugout right now, Dodgers outfielder who had a ball clang off his glove with the Dodgers up 2-0 in the top of the fourth inning.
Well, man on first at that point would have been the second out of the inning, and they would have, so two out would have been a two out of man on. Instead, it was one out, runners on second and third, loaded the bases. Then we have a playable ball at shortstop that was muffed.
Yep.
Future
Yankee Corey Seager.
And then Walker Buehler walks in a run before he's yanked having pitched 3 2/3. So not exactly the stopper, and it's now 4-2 Braves.
What a nightmare. And maybe this will be a lesson to you who think that once you've exercised your demons, there's no more demons to be had. And you know what? It's kind of worked for the Red Sox. Red Sox and their demons maybe were just so great that in 2004, yeah, they get a 20-year demon grace period. Because
yeah, they did a deal with somebody. Yeah, I'm forever convinced of that.
But the Dodgers, let's not forget, before winning that World Series last year,
mm-hmm.
this team that outspent everybody by $70
million, 1988,
was right? Just...
Kirk Gibson, right? That was the last one, right?
That was it. And they could not get it done. They finally got it done. But what we just witnessed this last half inning is reminiscent of a team that's still dealing with that stuff.
It's not them, you know? Mr. Lux is getting a lot of FaceTime on the broadcast right now because... Yeah, that did open the gates. And, you know, like, they're still in this game. Long way to go. 4-2 is nothing. But the way this series has played out so far, I know teams have come back from 0-3 in the playoffs. Well, not many.
No, it's just
not very many. So, this is – that was a really that half inning, if you're sitting – I would think the vibe in Dodger Stadium right now is a little shocky right now.
Yeah. And you know what? I haven't crunched the numbers, and I couldn't tell you – explicitly whether this would be one of the biggest upsets in the history of the postseason in Major League Baseball, but one of these teams won 88 games and the other one won 106 during the regular season. One of these teams was heavily favored going into this thing. One of these teams lost one of the best players in baseball before the trade deadline and somehow managed to piece together a winning season. And yes, there's caveats involved because they played in the National League East, but Alex Anthopoulos pulling off what he did, and we talked to him about the moves that he made and the decision-making that went into that when Ronald Acuña went down right before the deadline. That, combined with this, combined with whatever happens, I mean, they could be playing the Boston Red Sox, who aren't exactly a perfect team in the World Series.
I'd take them over the Red Sox right now if that was the, you know, if you're telling me that's the World Series matchup. Again, I've been wrong about the Red Sox all along, but it's a hell of a story, right? Like to get aggressive at the deadline when you'd lost Acuña, you lost Marcell Ozuna too, because you know who was made to disappear because of his off the field stuff. You know, your outfield was gone.
Yeah,
you know, and they were in a hot garbage of a division. But they certainly had a chance to win the division. So it's not like selling out, I guess, to get a wild card. But it's close to that, right? And all those people say, well, you know, why are you bothering? You know, why are you bothering to try and get into the postseason with a team that can't possibly win? Well, here you go. You know, they're 4.5 innings away from being up 3-0 against the defending World Series champion 106 win Los Angeles Dodgers and 4 wins away from winning a World Series.
Maybe this is too big a topic to get into with like 2 minutes to go in this radio program. And I don't know the specifics of the breakup between Alex Anthopoulos and Mark Shapiro here in Toronto. But I imagine, I don't know this, I don't know the man, there'll be some level of, look what I did, as Alex Anthopoulos was not retained. It was a mutual thing when he departed and, you know, spent some time with the Dodgers, but was not the general manager there. And now in his first gig as the guy doing what he's done already, and then coming away with the World Series ring, it might be an interesting narrative. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I can't do this one in a minute. If you want to bring it up tomorrow,
let's do it tomorrow.
It takes more than a minute to do that one because there are many elements in that story, and you're right. Someone will bring it up. But there are many elements to that story, and perhaps and I'll see which of those I'm willing to discuss on the radio. we could have a chat.
All right, let's do that tomorrow. There's plenty of baseball still to be played because, yeah, they're only in the bottom of the fourth inning. It's only a 2-run lead for the Braves over the Dodgers. But, yeah, some dramatics taking place in the afternoon in L.A. Later tonight, it is the American League Championship Series as the Red Sox trying to take a stranglehold on the Houston Astros in a game you can hear right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll be back tomorrow. You've been listening to The Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.